so that they can listen to my ocean. We don't need to swim to overcome the waves. We can float. And this one is called Embers. It's probably the only positive poem I've ever written. You are an ember, the beginning flames that lick my wooden body, trying to ignite my brittle skin. And I want to let you make me warm. You help me become what I already was, a source of heat and luminescence. You are the fire to my fallen branches. You make me into light.
And our next reader is Steve.
This one's called Cold as a Stone. I am a bad man, lost all control. I've been to places no one would dare to go. And I've looked the devil in the eye, and I traded it all for a faster ride. And now it's time to collect the prize, soulless and alone. I was born at the age of 16, when I discovered the flesh and the blood and the joy it brings. When others would go home and lay themselves to bed, I was out chasing demons to the bitter edge. I was cold as a stone. I was cold as a stone. I smoke a cigarette off the banks under the trees, where they've been dragging it for almost a week. The Willamette River, looking for my true love beneath the murky green. Oh, how she screamed. Oh, how she screamed. And she was cold as a stone. So cold, cold as a stone. And I held her close. I held her cold as a stone. Creepy. No. Okay. This song is called Nature of Man. And goes like this. On the day of the dawning of man, violence spread across the land. Blood was sown in every grain of sand, and no one could deny the nature of man. Years passed, turning pages in the wind, and mercy was cried to the heavens, and then words were written to govern the violence at hand. Still no one could deny the nature of man. On the sacred day, ocean stopped mid-wave, and the sun broke free from the gilded cage, and warmth was spread to every woman and man. Hand in hand, all denied nature of man. That's my two.
Our next reader is Haley.
I am going to actually read some short poems. This one's called How I Am Trying. Darker than deep winter, the shadow of absence covers my eyes and colors them. Birds migrate in this engagement. Birds call out their constant journey. How easy to get lost. I want to know if you can hear the closed line of my mouth, how I am trying to speak, wordless. I don't know what I am doing, just moving from season to season as hunger compels me. The eye inside that never opens outward is looking for you. And this one is, all the languages I cannot speak. One has no consonants at all, not even and birds that hear it start flying upside down. Another, favored among diplomats, consists solely of the movement of eyebrows. There's one similar to a Romance language, but instead of gender, every noun has color, lapis, vermilion, magenta, so that there are no hats that aren't chartreuse and no mountain lions that aren't mauve. Everyone sees the tawny beast and the hats variable in hue. Language is like that. The fluent speaker understands that words matter less than the novice imagines. There is also a language in which your father is dead cannot be expressed. No word for orphans, starvation, pestilence. Still, sometimes a person you love lies on a metal bed, not breathing, no heart beating. Still, a lesser suffering can sometimes be eased with sustenance, with medicine. Those who live in this griefless language must borrow pain, bend foreign syllables to fit, write with a different alphabet or in italics. Words make our world what it is and unmake what it is not. They find these words in one last and fearsome language, musical, maniacal, a tongue native only to sorrow, where all the lost remain unredeemed, even as you hold them, fierce and speechless, in your arms.
And our next reader is Hannah.
Thank you. For these next two poems, there's a content warning for aftermath of abuse. And this poem is untitled. Someone else will have to forgive you. If I had brought you to a courtroom, I would not have been your judge or jury. I would not have said a word to you. Our narrative played out with lawyers as mouthpieces, our violence weighed and measured and dissected. You can't submit agony or abandonment into evidence. What does it matter what you stuck in me? I care what you took from me. I care that the me before you and the me after you is the difference between fresh water and salt water. Certain creatures lurk in me in dark, inky depths, and certain creatures died, and some creatures survived, and I do not know which of these I am. I do know that my belly is full of that place where river meets ocean. And if I took you to court tomorrow, you'd walk out and some part of me would go with you. Someone else will have to forgive you. No court in this world would convict you. Not when all I really want to say is, how dare you leave me alone to hold myself together after you'd finished tearing me apart? Something lives in my stomach, and I know that it is hungry. I am afraid to feed it. I do not know what survived you. I do not know what if I wanted to thrive. Someone else can forgive you. I have to forgive me. And this next poem is titled Tenderization. Softness is a privilege that I'm scared to lose. I hid my softness when I squared my jaw or pinched the thin skin of my knees, like I inherited a generational memory of nuns striking knuckles on my mother's hands or swallowed my grandmother's eroding bones, when the teacup on the table might as well have been climbing a mountain for how perilous and shaky a journey it took to her lips. I'm afraid to lose the softness that benefits me in an ease to love, an ease to show love. I like touching and teasing out the apple on the cheeks of those familiar with my peculiar intimacy. I like the red glow when I make them smile. Being gentle and kind is a unique challenge when the person you most desire to say sweet nothings soiled every love letter with a threat until you couldn't tell the difference, and it makes you dread softness in them and the softness in you that is just target practice. They'll make you thank them for every direct hit. After someone punished you for your love, letting go of calluses and the tough exterior can be its own act of independence and defiance, that I am not so wrecked by your hands, that I won't reach out with my own, that I can be soft. So I am afraid that if I am not my mother's daughter, then the world will see my softness and take it for fat on the cut of meat and try to saw it off of me, all the while saying, this is for the best. You'll thank us when we're through.
And our next reader is Tori.
This is called There's a Fabulous Strangeness in Realizing You Are Turning Into Your Parents. Instead of texting my landlord about my life, I write a rent check and grab a pink post-it note to affix to it. I got another cat. Thank you. I take out some rubber stamps to decorate the envelope. firmly pressing on the indigo pad, carefully sticking the image of a jukebox to the paper. My dad is across town, gray and white moth-wing eyebrows perched on his face, car grease on dirty cut-off jeans, hunched over a crumb-covered placemat. There are art accessories all over it, and a Marionberry jam-smeared paper towel posed like a jaunty hat on the corner. He's working on his postcards, cutting out photos with an X-Acto blade. Jazz is playing in the kitchen, slinking over black and white tiles. He is gluing vintage stamps to the card, to send to me, although we live in the same state, the same city, actually. I hear my mother's words coming out of my mouth sometimes. When I cook and someone likes it and I say, oh, you like it? I just sauteed some garlic and olive oil with diced onions and fresh cracked pepper in my cast iron pan. Decorating my postcards, chatting up clerks at Trader Joe's and telling them details about my recent dental work, rattling off recipes to friends, is pouring out words. I love you, I love you, I love you, without having to say it. There's a cobwebby hole in my heart cupboard where nostalgia lives, but that past smells cloying, artificial maple bacon grease lingering till 2 in the afternoon, fireplaces that cough dark smoke and carpet that's mostly golden retriever fuzz and cat hair. The nostalgia sounds like sighing and slammed doors, telling me that I don't have plans in the morning while the television blares in my dreams. I'll live in the present, even if it means being pen pals in the same city. All right, this next one is called Let's Take Things Slowly. Your face has seen so many laughs, they still live there. Like ripples, the ocean weaves tenderly, drawn by small fingertips at the shore. You are equal handfuls, a penchant for hot wax and pollock-like spatters, dripped from a candle, liquid searing, but not quite burning, on a hip, thigh, stomach. In the other palm, not wanting to break a little girl's heart about the existence of the Easter Bunny, while the road is sweeping by outside the car, and she doesn't want to hear another lie. You love me, and I know it's true. When the night spills out and the air doesn't move, it is the loudest absence of noise I ever listen for. I weigh all the choices I have made to date, kicking over the basket labeled good choices in my head, spreading them all over the floor, burning them in a waste bin. Computer lights, red, yellow, blinking. Some stare wide-eyed, like me, heart pounding while you snooze, and I cannot hear the familiar strains of the freeway, my city-made ocean, with whooshes and honks, beeps of the faux waterway outside my window, typically so constant at night, and scattering sounds over nighttime racing thoughts, wondering if we are enough. I know if I wake you up, you'll hold me and listen, regardless of when your alarm clock goes off in the morning. Stay, you said, months ago.
I think we have time for one more round, like one each. So we're going to go Danny.
Okay. One each. Made it hard on me. Okay. This one's called A Poem About Thrashing. I guess it goes without saying that some days are harder than others, some weeks, some months, some hours, but I'll still say it because as much as I want to yell, I can hardly whisper, and somehow a poem is the most noise I can muster from my funnel of a throat that just keeps siphoning out the screaming slowly. And I'm not a violent person, but I feel violent some days. Because some days are harder than others. Some days I want to thrash my limbs against brick like fleshy hammers, making little impact, making all the impact, until the wooden handles splinter and I'm still hitting the brick with the tiny pieces of metal left on the ends. And I keep hitting it, even broken, even after I'm already less than I was. And I guess it goes without saying, some days are harder than others. But I'm saying it. I'm still saying it. Thanks.
And then Steve.
Okay. I don't have a title for this, I don't think.
That's okay.
Yeah.
We know what I think about titles.
I know. They're so unimportant sometimes. This poem's called Leap of Faith. They've been coming for years, since the beginning of time, the old, young, hurt, and sublime, upon arrival They disrobe. The wind and the rain turns their skin red as a rose. The Oregon cliffs, carved by the Oregon coast. These cliffs that rain to take away your pain. And they walk to the edge, feet by feet, growing black crow's wings. Then they take that leap, the leap of faith, into the gray mist over the rocks below. And one by one, they fly over the rocks below. I bought a new TV down at Circuit City. I bought a Bible in the back off the bestseller's rack. I took a long walk home and turned the pages through Job. He was a long gone cat. Couldn't find his way back. At home, I flipped the switch and I fell asleep to the voice. And it was a familiar sound, but underneath it was just noise. And I don't know who's gonna win. And I can't shake this story out of my head. I took a walk in the dark down to Lentz Park, and I passed a homeless camp. Tarps blew damp. They were all digging in the dirt, trying to bury their hurt. But the look in their eye said this ain't no lie. And then I woke up in a tree, in the last of the winter's leaves, with pitch in my hair, next to a bird's nest. There was a tiny bird with a tiny beak, too tiny for words, too tiny to speak. I had to squint my eyes just to hear. And when that beak opened up, the whole world appeared. And I bought a new TV down at Circuit City, and I bought a Bible in the back off the bestseller's rack. And I took a long walk home through 3 feet of snow. And the tracks I laid are the tracks only Job could know. And at home I flipped the switch, and I fell asleep to a voice, a familiar sound, but underneath it was just noise. And a king was crowned. And do you know who's gonna win? And do you know who's gonna win? And I can't shake this story out of my head. And I can't shake this story out of my head.
Next reader is Haley.
I just won't tell you the title.
Okay, that's fine.
My dad was a commercial fisher out on Prince William Sound in Alaska. I sometimes went with him when I was a kid. I learned to untangle bright salmon as the net spooled in, how they fought, and how freeing them was no favor as they slipped away into the dark hold, never to breathe again. Later, he also fished the Bering Sea, Bristol Bay. That's where he died, 300 more miles away from home. The only time I went to crew in Bristol Bay, I was a teenager, no fish came through. So we took the skiff and went to check a little island. We saw an animal on the shore. At first, I thought it was a seal. As we get closer, I saw it was a walrus. As we reached shore, I realized it was a walrus with no head. That's why it waited for us so patiently. Mostly, I remember the sound, though. I remember my first time out. I was maybe 5 or 6. I got seasick all over the exposed engine block. I remember eating a lot of Spam and peeing in a bucket that got dipped overboard between uses. One time, a bird flew into the boat's cabin. We were way offshore, and this bird was a phalarope. That's a shore bird, but one that likes to hang out far from shore. Pelagic is what they call birds like that, same as what they call the water those birds love. I remember it sitting there on a cassette case. It might have been raining. We kept the bird until we got closer to land, but memory is weird, and I'm not sure why we would do that. Maybe it was tired and needed a ride? Eventually, my dad took it in hand and went out of the cabin. My dad's hands open and drop and rise in one swift sway that sets our brief companion free of us. I don't remember that part, but it must have happened, because that bird isn't still sitting in the cabin of that boat, which is probably out of commission now in some boat graveyard or whatever happens to old boats. What usually happens to phalaropes? Do they die at sea, or do they prefer a rocky shore to tuck their beak into when it's time? What happens when walruses die of old age, unmurdered, undefeated? My father was on land, loading nets, getting ready. An accident. Random. But some people assume his boat went down in a storm, and I don't always correct them. There's something about lost at sea that makes more sense, that satisfies. That's what we want, to understand. We want answers more than we want the truth.
Our next reader is Hannah.
Thank you. The title of this poem is I Will Be Okay If You Don't Love Me Back. If I am the berry you pick, stain your fingers with, and lick away, leaving behind my brambles that hid the rest, then I was content to be swallowed. And if you'd like to spend a few hours plucking and taking everything I can offer until your now heavy belly complains of too much sweet and your fingers sting from the pricking thorns, then I was content to be gorged upon. And even if you only spare me a glance, careful to give me a wide berth, not interested in any fruit or the sort of sweet that makes teeth ache, then I'll just be as content to see you go and give myself to the birds. I am here if only to be in reach. I am here to be consumed.
And then our next reader is Tori.
This poem also has a title. It is titled Eight Things About Muskuta, Illinois. 1. You are my own humid pocket of the Midwest. August crickets chirp and stalwart porcelain deer stand guard on brillo pad lawns. I squelch under your too tight embrace, sun pooling liquidly in my shoes. 2. You are pungent sauerkraut on bratwurst, standing in line on trampled grass, potato pancakes on plastic plates, applesauce soaking through the crunch. You are a plastic bottle of Smirnoff ice that nobody bothered to card before. If my mom hadn't run away to Oregon, my life would be Bible clubs and tractors. I would never have known the life of a miserable vegan, jiggly orange marshmallow salad everywhere but on my own Easter dinner plate. 3. The small town that stretches so far, it doesn't know how to be anything other than corn. 4. A man in a feathered headdress watches over cornfields painted on a water tower. I wonder why he is stricken with such a bitter expression. Maybe he knows he is the mascot of the local football team. 5. I want to lick the grease of anything deep fried from my fingertips. Nobody at this restaurant even knows what trans fats are. 6. Muskuta, you stare when I ask for a latte, pouring Folger's coffee in a chipped mug. I'm glad you don't want to impress with your fine and fancy espressos. If I stare close, oily shapes dance swirling on the opaque surface of the coffee. 7. I want to sing along with a twanging radio, slamming screen doors and heartache, baleful tunes of rendered lovers, and long soured milk left on the porch. 8. Walking past tall hunched streetlights and moths shuddering, papery wings that brush each other. This is where all my stories spill out. I walk with my brother and tell him things I'd told no one. The only other characters present, standing quietly, are the corn, the dissonant buzz of the nighthawks, the shallow blackness of the creek, sidling by under the bridge.
And because we have a few minutes, and because I can, I'm going to read a poem, because, you know, why not? I wrote this one when all the fires were happening in the gorge, and it doesn't have a title. The snow that wasn't snow fell from the sky while the trees burned, turning the sun pink in the gray smoke that passed for air. I waited for the light to change, watching the cars, their headlights breaking through the darkness of midday, wondering, is this what the end will look like? Thanks very much to all our readers and to the audience and to Patrick.
I'd like to thank all of our readers and you, Amanda, for hosting tonight.
Yeah, thank you.
And when is the next...
The next Dudes Poet Society is next Monday, and that's our one-year anniversary at the Big Legrowski. And the next New Poet Challenge is the first Monday in June, which is, I believe, the 4th, I think.
I think it's the 27th. Is that correct?
Oh, no. The next Neon Dreams is the 27th of May. Sorry. And then the last and greatest New Poet Challenge will be the first Tuesday in June, which is the 4th, I think. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, the 4th. So, yeah. So...
So we still have 4 minutes left.
Okay. I guess I can.
Do we want to have one chime-in poem of...
Yeah, I could do eeny, meeny, miny, mo.
Well, how about everyone just says a phrase and that turns into a poem?
Okay, you're right. Everybody's looking at me like really weird.
Okay, so maybe it was a bad idea.
Okay, well, Hannah's ready. So go, Hannah. No, you're not good. Well, I could do one. I'll do one. Okay, I'll do one more. The drunk old poet, welcome long past worn, reputation or shared memory, cling like lichen or stale smoke. Former friends are uncomfortably forced acquaintances now, wishing silently, yet not unkindly, for his memorial.
Ouch.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I'll do one more, too. The angry man at the bus stop screamed at me, spittle flying, while the morning sun glinted against his milky skin. You don't have to pay, he bellowed and waved at my fare card. They let anyone ride for free, homeless, diseased freaks, anyone. He glared at the man clenching his sleeping bag and meager possessions huddling a few steps away. This city is a cesspool. The homeless man boarded at the bus, paying with his crumpled bills. I swiped my fare card. The angry man watched us both. I told the man, the problem with this city is people like you. He shoved past me with a grunt to glare from the back of the bus. I never saw him pay.
Wow. Just another day in Portland.
Yes, it is. Yeah. Well, you know, that's where my book of vignettes that I'm working on is Dear A-Hole on the Bus, so which is appropriate to riding public transportation. So, yeah. But it's we are welcome to come to the Dudes Poet Society every Monday night at the Big Legrowski at 6 o'clock, where we have an open mic where people are welcome to read their poetry or any spoken word. It doesn't have to be poetry for 7 minutes, but no music. Although there is a great open jam at 8:30 at the same venue where they do have provide instruments and have a great open jam for music. So, yeah. So, our next reading is Monday night. Or the next Neon Dreams is May 27th, and the last New Poet Challenge is June 4th. So, yeah.
Okay. So, see everyone there.
Yep. Thank you very much.
You've been listening to Talking Earth. This is KBO Portland, 90.7 near FM dial.
Thank you.
Thank you.
K
B
O
O
Portland. Thank you.
Okay, welcome to the show, everyone. I'm Noah.
And I'm Kirsten.
And we are gathered here today to introduce yet another episode of Subhuman Intellect.